Okay, good. I'm going to resume recording. So this is the Zoom H4N, the resuming recording. All right, good. So great. So we're now continuing the audio portion. If I worked hard, would you rather have pain plus energy, or, you know, I think that's preferable. I think most people, if they've ever experienced the feeling of not having any energy because their nerves are leaking energy, or because, you know, which seems to be what I'm experiencing. Yeah, this could have been my cause. That nerve damage could have been the cause of what I thought was chronic fatigue syndrome all those years. That's what it could have been. It could have been that caused the draining of my energy, the short circuit of my nervous system that caused the lack of energy. But I did get a lot of the energy back when I started taking calcium, though. So that changed everything. But I still do have the low energy. I'm not as energetic. Now, I'm 65 years old. I might be energetic more than some people, you know, for my age. I'm not interested in being good for my age. I want to be, you know, forget that. I mean, I want to be as energetic as I can be. For my health, I'm considering my condition, my health condition overall, I should have a certain level of energy based on that overall health condition that I have. It shouldn't be short-circuited by some nerve damage. I don't think we can do anything about it. I mean, Jehovah knows whether we should do something about it, so I'm going to be asking Jehovah what I should do, but I don't think it's advisable. Where do I sit? This way? Yeah. So to center myself, I tried for a long time to get my camera here centered, with me centered, and zoom in on my face using this camera in Mac OS, but I can't do it. It's not possible to do that in Mac OS without some kind of third-party app, I believe. So I haven't found the app yet. But Mac OS should incorporate that into their accessibility feature, is to be able to stop the zoom from moving when the mouse moves, so that I can move my mouse around, like now, and yet have my face zoomed in. That would be the ideal. Because then I can do a lot more with this screen recording using my image on the screen with the conference cam, or whatever, what do they call that cam on a laptop? The selfie cam, whatever. Oh, it's the webcam. That's what it's called. Yeah, the webcam. Right. That's what they call it. Yeah, it's so interesting that there's so many different forms of terminology. There's so many terms within computer terminology, even though I know a lot of the terms. I don't know all of them, I guess, but it just depends how much reading I've done recently, because this terminology always changes. As technology advances, they come up with a lot of new terminology sometimes. I'm still considering whether I should buy the iPhone 14. It would cost me about $64 a month. $65 a month to get the 14 Pro Max. No, the 14 Pro, I should say. Yeah, the 14 Pro with 256, I think it is, that I'm thinking about getting. So $65 a month for 2 years. And the thing about Apple, they're amazing, because what they do... Okay, yeah, I want to talk a little bit about Apple. What they do is they offer no interest. You don't have to pay any interest for 2 years. That's incredible. That's just the price divided by 24 months. That's what you pay. They don't charge interest on the loan. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, that's, who does that? Nobody. So Apple is unbelievable. Now, that's a $1,500 phone. That's what it would cost after 2 years. That's what I will have paid. It's a lot of money. But I mean, it seems like a lot of money when you could buy probably a $200 phone. I'm sure you can somewhere, but that runs Android or something. But and even some of the Apple phones you can get for, I think, $400 or $500 or maybe even a little less than that. That run not Android. I mean, that run iOS that are Apple phones. So, but somebody said the other day there was a comment somebody made somewhere in a chat room, and they were saying that they have a computer that only costs $100, or a laptop for $200, or whatever it was. But the point wasn't the actual number; it was just the fact that the Apple computers are like not 100 times, 10 times more expensive, something like that, right? I mean, an Apple computer is more like 1,000 minimum, or some that kind of thing. Well, you can get the Mac Mini for somewhere around that in Canadian dollars, I guess. The M1 even, like the Apple Silicon. But, so Apple computers are expensive, but the thing is, you when you're in the Apple ecosystem, you think differently about it. You plan your expenditures. You save your money. You know you're going to need that extra money to buy that Apple computer. You save and you allow and you allocate for it because you know there's nothing to compare with Apple. There's nothing that compares. You can't even compare with Mac OS, for example. If you're running a Mac, you can't compare Windows to Mac OS. Mac OS is more like Linux. You know, it's rock solid. Okay, it's really rock solid, not like Windows. Now Windows is more, what's the word? Oh, I'm trying to think. There's a good word probably for that. It's more ubiquitous. I mean, obviously, it's more widespread, but it's more. There are a lot more third-party apps for Windows, like tons more options for programs you can choose from. So Windows is more widely adopted, but there's a word for it. It's more I wouldn't say it's more useful, because it's not. That's sort of the paradox, but it's actually Windows gives you too many options, so you can never get through them all. If you want to investigate all the programs you could run on Windows, you can never investigate them all. It's too many. So actually, that's another advantage of Apple. It will narrow you down in your focus somewhat in terms of what programs you can get for free, for example, which is what I always get are the free programs, for example. That's what I always do is I avoid spending money on software, and that can save you a lot of money, a ton of money. And like today I'm using a new app, which I just got today, called OBS Studio version 28, which is for the Mac, and it's free and it's open source and it's completely free and open source. So, and it's very powerful, and people use it for streaming online too. They use it as a streaming app. Maybe I could stream directly from my computer using this app. Is that possible? I just thought of that. Maybe that's possible. Might be possible. I don't know that is, I don't think that is possible actually, but might be. But the thing is that this program is free, and I'm using it to record the screen, and I'm doing it in such a way that I can make a much more compact file on my internal drive, or my drive I'm recording onto, the drive onto which I'm recording. It can have a more, it doesn't lose much quality, but it's much more compact because this program allows me to establish what the resolution is on the screen when I'm recording. And you can do, I mean, there's a video on YouTube that explains all that, how to do that. It's, what's it called? Let me mute this. Okay, I don't want it popping up with audio here. Where is it? Not here. Okay. Let me go into my history. Let's see. Where is it? There it is. Yeah. It's creating smaller screen capture recordings on a Mac. That's the one. And it's on MacMost is the channel. MacMost Video. All one word, MacMost Video. one word, that YouTube channel. It's a pretty simple explanation to follow. You can understand how to do it. Because OBS is a little bit of a... It's not a simple, completely simple program. It has a lot of power. I mean, it's simple once you get some instruction. It's very simple, but it's far better than the QuickTime player that Apple, or more powerful, the program that Apple provides is QuickTime player, which can't do this. It can't zoom, or I can't zoom. What am I saying? I can't zoom. Maybe I can zoom in OBS. That's possible. I actually didn't try that. I can possibly zoom in on part of the screen when I haven't tried to see if I can do that. I'll look into that later. But I can set it up so I can record in much smaller format, which I didn't know if I could do that or not, but I found out today I can't do it in QuickTime. So anyway, I've downloaded OBS and I've installed it and I'm running it and I'm using it right now. So that's another thing. The good news about the annuity is that I want to say I'm very, happy about it. And that's because now I can just relax and think about what I want to do with my future. Because my money part, I'm not going to be scrambling around trying to earn interest on money that's just sitting there. I've just invested the money and it's going to return interest in the future, but I don't have to do any more investing of it. I can just reap the monthly return. And that means all of my other things that I need to do, of which there are a lot. You know, yesterday I had to change my cars over. Every day there's something I have to do. You know, in the fall there's more, I'll have to bring in things, I'll have to maybe cut some trees or, trim some branches or I'll have to do some raking of leaves. Lots of things I'll have to do that I need time for, and I don't have time to be busy with scrambling around for financial things, which I'm grateful for, because now it's all more or less Jehovah willing, it's settled. I say Jehovah willing because something could still happen. So it's always in God's hands. Jehovah always is the final arbiter of everything. And, he's always existed, because if Jehovah had not always existed, then he would have had to have been created by somebody. So that's the idea of the person we call Jehovah. But he's got a name. He's got a personality. He has a name. He's powerful. He's loving. He's a personification of love, actually. So, was there something else in the news now? I was just thinking. He's the personification of love. When we're talking about Jehovah, we're going to read Proverbs chapter 30 in a moment here, hopefully. But Jehovah is... Do I have any idea how long? I have no idea how long this recording is. Do I? Or do I? Just a minute. OBS is recording. So giving me the duration. Let's see. I can't see. Oh, yeah, there it is. 30 minutes. Okay, good. Good. I see the duration. All right. So it's recording, by the way, at 60 frames per second, too, which is incredible. That's amazing. I've never had that. I don't think that's what QuickTime does. I doubt it. So this is going to be very interesting to see what Handbrake will do with this when I'm done too. How small a file I'll get. I might get a very small file. That would be impressive. Oh, it's going to be exciting just to find out. But OBS is the name of the program. OBS Studio. Three letters. OBS Studio. The studio is not one of the letters, I should say. OBS are the three letters. Studio is the name. The second part of the name. So it's available for more than just Mac. So I was talking about Linux, yeah. Linux, comparing Windows to, that's what I was talking about. Comparing Windows with Linux or Macs, okay? So Linux is a rock solid system. The problem is nothing is standard in Linux. I mean, in a way it's more standard, and in some ways you have to Google everything to find out how to do anything, because there's no user manual in Linux that explains it. It's extremely difficult to use. And to, if you want your Windows to always open up in the same place on the screen every time you boot Linux, that's not easy to accomplish, I found. Whereas on Mac OS has everything done like that. All of, what Mac OS is the same. It's the same idea. It's based on Linux. What's it called? What's the Mac system based on? OpenBSD. That's what it is. I just remembered. I think it's OpenBSD, right? It's based on BSD. FreeBSD, yeah, FreeBSD. It's based on FreeBSD, or there's another three-letter acronym, BSD, which is a form of Linux, right? So it's a branch off of Linux. So the security and the solidity of Mac OS is like Linux, which is rock solid. It's much better than Windows ever was. But, I mean, the thing is, you can't really say that because Windows keeps on transforming itself into an angel of light, maybe we could say. So even though Mac OS is, more expensive, if you look, but it's not. The OS is free. That's the other thing. You never have to pay to get an upgrade. Never. With Mac OS. That's another thing. So all the software that comes with a Mac computer is free for the future. The future versions are free up till now. It's always been that way. So that's not like Windows at all. They're not trying to milk it for more money. And so Mac, the ecosystem in which Mac is operating is a very friendly one. And, I mean, the thing is, even though Mac OS is, Windows is very, you have to pay for it, that's true, but it was never as rock solid. It's always suspicious. I hate to be, I'm not interested in actually being on one side or the other, because there are people who run Windows. And I ran Windows for years. I ran Windows for years, years and years and years, right? So I used to see the benefit of Windows. I don't see it anymore. But the thing is, as long as Mac OS is in existence, it standardizes everything and it's rock solid. There are going to be some glitches, like, unfortunately, there are some issues that come up, but it's not anywhere near. Because Windows tries to do everything with every computer and run on every system, There are things on Windows that you never have happen in Mac OS, because it's Mac OS is only designed to run on one hardware, only on Apple hardware, only on the Apple hardware. So Apple builds the hardware specifically to run Mac OS. They write Mac OS specifically to run on their hardware. It's just a perfect marriage of the software and the hardware with Apple. It's phenomenal how well it works. So it's got to be much better than Windows, because Windows attempts to run on all computers, all the computers that satisfy the minimum hardware requirements and so on. So there are infinitely more bugs, you could say, with Windows that you will never see on Mac OS. Now, Mac OS will have some bugs, you know, and they have to fix them, and they have to do, and sometimes there are things that I don't like about Mac OS. There are quite a few of those. And there's lots of features that are not implemented yet in Mac OS, too, that could be implemented, but they haven't implemented these features. A lot of those. So there's things to be aware of that you may not like about Mac OS. But if you stick with it, you'll see in the long term a lot of benefits from using Mac OS, in my opinion. That's what I think is the truth, too. So, but Linux is, like, you know, more secure, which is true of Mac OS. Basically, there's never any virus that runs on Mac OS. That's true. It's almost true. You can't say that about Windows. So, I mean, you can almost do more harm by installing antivirus on a Mac than you can by not installing it, because the antivirus that you install might have some Trojan horses built into it. So you might be better to not install antivirus on a Mac. That's how secure it is. That's saying a lot, because it's so secure. That's how you can say that. So Linux is similar in that respect. Linux is similar. Now I when I ran Linux, I had a lot of issues with Linux. It would do some strange things. So and it wasn't standardized like the Mac OS is. See, Mac OS has got everything's designed to run on the hardware, and everything's built to run and look like a beautiful user interface. It's a fantastic user interface, Mac OS. Well, that reminds me of something. I think since Steve Jobs has passed off the scene, I think he was an innovator who kept on trying to implement all the new features. We're not seeing that anymore. Like, Steve Jobs tried to stay ahead of Microsoft, and he tried to produce new hardware and software that would implement features that users would appreciate and make that would make their lives easier. That's what I think Steve Jobs was always doing. And I don't think we're seeing that. I don't think Steve Jobs would produce one phone after another with just slight upgrades. I think he'd be always trying to push the envelope. But that's, of course, maybe why he died, too. He was a hard worker. But he ate a lot of fruit. Which brings me to another point, something I want to mention. I stopped. I ate my yogurt, which is Balkan yogurt. I've changed over my yogurt from the Greek yogurt to Balkan yogurt, and Balkan yogurt is different. And it, by the way they make it, I'm not an expert, so I guess I won't describe that. But it's also 6% fat instead of 5% fat. So I was able to get a little higher in the percentage of milk fat, which I used to get 10% of. But I can't buy that locally right now. I would buy it if I could get it, but so I've got the 6%, but I ate it without fruit, is what I wanted to say. Last night I ate the Balkan yogurt without any fruit, and I didn't have any problem. It was good. I realized then that this avoidance of sugar does bear also on more than just processed sugar. In other words, I can abstain from eating fruit as well and avoid sugar that way, and that will improve and reduce my inflammation and allow me to lose weight more easily. And by the way, yesterday, I think that was the first day I ever ate the yogurt without fruit. But yesterday I tightened my belt one notch, and I could do it. I could work with my belt tightened to the sixth hole. It used to be, maybe I was even more than that when I was, I must have been even tighter belt than that. I must have had a tighter belt than that when I was thinner than I am now. But that was one more notch that I couldn't get before. So I think, but I honestly believe when you eat any sugar, including fruit sugar, it's dangerous, and that's maybe why Steve Jobs, who ate fruits, otherwise known as Steve Fruits, that's why he died, possibly, because he was a fruitarian. He ate nothing but fruit. So I do believe that fruit is dangerous. Now, Steve Jobs was very thin. He was thin. It didn't cause him to gain weight. But there's been some research recently that suggests that sugar can cause cancer. And I was talking to somebody, I'm going to keep them anonymous, just for this discussion, that I was talking to somebody about stevia, which I was formerly calling stevia until I looked it up in the dictionary and found out it's called stevia. But I think stevia makes more sense, because stevia sounds like a person's name. Like you're saying someone's name plus something else at the end. So I think maybe stevia, maybe there's a good argument for using stevia as the pronunciation, but it's not the correct pronunciation according to my dictionary. So, but this stevia, maybe I'll call it, is something that the Food and Drug Administration has not approved in the States, except as a supplement. It's not an approved food. They haven't approved it for safety. Well, I found that was interesting. It's not approved for safety. It's a sweetener that's considered artificial, even though it's extracted from plants, and as is also xylitol and erythritol. And also, this same person was mentioning Malitol is another sugar alcohol, which I think I need to research. I looked it up, I think, already, but I can't remember what I found out now. I can't remember the details offhand. Well, malitol sounds like it's from apples, right? The malates from apples, it sounds like, to me. Yeah, right. So that could be a good one to research and maybe for some people to eat. But this idea of not eating fruit is what I'm talking about, right? So, but here's the problem with stevia, just like any of these other sweeteners, even if they're not sugar, even if they're wood alcohols or some other, there's even more chemical sweeteners that I don't even want to talk about. I would never consider using them any more than I would consider any chemical substance that's not food to try and reduce or change or eliminate a symptom. I would never use any substance for the purpose of changing a symptom in my body, because symptoms are manifested by the body for a purpose, and I would never want to interfere with that purpose of the body. I want to treat the body as a whole, holistically. So, but this idea of these sweeteners, they can get in the body, they mimic sugar in the way they taste sweet. So that tricks the body into raising blood sugar or, you know, producing a hunger response, or at least something. Even if they don't spike the blood sugar, they produce a hunger response. And you don't want that, because you're trying to lose weight sometimes. Most of us eat too much. You don't want to trigger a hunger response. So even my xylitol, if I could cut back on how much I'm using, that might reduce my hunger response. But I don't find that I get a hunger response with the xylitol at all, because when I chew my gum, that's the end of my meal. It doesn't trigger me to want to eat more. It satisfies me. So I think, but the problem with some sweeteners, they might just, like sugar, processed sugar, which is deadly, I believe, but it triggers more hunger when you eat that. You actually get, because your body, your brain too, the pleasure centers, as Dr. Jamnadas describes them in his discussions about processed sugar, they are highly addictive. The pleasure centers cause you to get addicted to the sugar, to where when you eat some processed sugar, your brain says, that felt really good, let's get some more of that. So it triggers the hunger response for that reason too, that your body wants pleasure, more pleasure. You want more sugar or more something that's going to trigger more of the pleasure centers activity. So yeah, so the worst is processed sugar, but there are other things to be aware of. These diet drinks, I think, are deadly, because they're not preventing people from, you know, eating more, or from, they're not preventing the hunger response from being triggered. It's like a trick, right? The body says, you're tricking your body if you drink these diet drinks. You're saying, and I said at one time, you know, that Coca-Cola and or any dark cola or beef were things to be avoided, for the reason that they rob calcium because of the phosphates that combine with calcium and produce appetite, which is a bone form. Appetite, A-P-A-T-I-T-E, is not soluble in the stomach, so it just goes through the system, and you lose your calcium if you eat beef or drink dark colas. You're losing calcium by doing it as it precipitates out. But the thing is, I said that years ago, and then many people apparently started drinking all kinds of other sugar drinks, which is just terrible. I mean, I never meant it as an excuse to drink other drinks. That wasn't why I said it. That wasn't the point. The point is, soft drinks are bad. Those are the worst, basically. That's the point. They're all bad. They're terrible because... And diet drinks are... What happens, I believe, is what's happening is... it's just so easy to understand it this way. You take in a sweet drink, even if it's got zero calories... You're telling your body it's okay to eat, you know, it's okay to eat, because you've got this, the sweetness means the body's used to having food along with the sweetness. So if it tastes the sweetness, it says, where's the food? It's okay to eat because we've got the sweetness. So you're tricking your brain, and the pleasure centers of your brain are being tricked into thinking you need food to satisfy a hunger, because you haven't eaten yet and you've put the sweetness in. There's something that's going on there that's extremely insidious. Okay, so don't drink drinks like that. Drink water if you want to survive and be healthy and live long. You have to drink something that's pure, like water. Pure water, the best water you can get. That's virtually all I drink, other than milk and cream and the stuff I drink in my matcha tea lattes. And the idea of coffee. Okay, idea of coffee comes up sometimes. Dr. Daniel Amen is the man who does brain scans, and he is an MD. I mean, that kind of doctor. He has got a lot of information through his brain scan work about what different substances do to people. And he's not, I think he's probably addicted to coffee. That's why he's saying it. Yeah, I think that's true, now that I think of it. But I think he's more concerned about the caffeine. I think that's maybe his concern there. I'm not sure, but I don't know what he thinks causes the problems if coffee's not good. But he's not against coffee, which I don't think is. I don't think it means anything, because he drinks coffee, I guess. That's what it says. I believe he does anyway drink coffee. There are a lot of people who drink coffee, and coffee is, eventually I'll have something more conclusive to say about it, but it's a huge gimmick, at the very least. It's a gigantic gimmick. The people who talk about, well, we know it triggers some kind of glands function, like the adrenal glands or something, right? Which can't be good if you haven't even eaten food. That doesn't sound like it's good to trigger certain glands to produce things when you haven't even eaten food. That sounds more like a drug than anything else, which is, it's a bad type of behavior to be doing. I mean, I never noticed the effect of caffeine in the matcha tea, and yet it's far more potent than any coffee I've ever drunk at all, like far more. It gives me far more of a kick, far more of a boost in terms of energy and health and everything. It just does everything. So, the matcha, I haven't had any matcha tea today. I've just had a few potato chips today so far. Haven't had anything yet. And I worked hard yesterday, so I should be starving, but I didn't really eat much today. Now, I'm careful about which potato chips I eat too, but probably eventually I'll have to stop eating potato chips and find some better thing than that even. I feel like that's possible because of the oils that they use in the frying of these chips or whatever, the oils they put in these chips, even if they're using good salt, which is not processed salt, they're still using some oil, which Dr. Jamnadas talks about these vegetable seed oils. They're all bad in his view. They're dangerous. So I haven't gotten off those yet, totally. I'm far from perfect. I know I'm far from perfect, but I mean, the thing is, I mean, my dietary habits have gotten so much better, though, in some ways, and worse in others. But I mean, I didn't used to eat potato chips, I don't think, at all, so, or hardly ever. So I now eat them fairly regularly as a way to break a fast or to do something where I'm not eating a lot of them. But I mean, the thing is, yeah, in some ways, I don't eat as many different things every day now, probably, as I used to, but I do listen to my body. My body doesn't tell me, or my body tells me exactly what I need to eat. The body always tells you. If you need to eat salad, it tells you. You need to eat salad now. You know, that's what happens with your, especially when you're practicing good food habits. You're not eating processed foods, especially when you're not tricking your body with sugars and sweeteners. And you know, your body doesn't lie to you, especially when you have all your calcium and magnesium and vitamin K2 and all the proper nutrients, B12, you know, selenium, you know, your omegas and all these things. You're taking these supplements, your multivitamin, your boron, all these things. If you've got them all going in the right ratios, your body doesn't lie to you anymore. Your body tells you exactly what you need, when you need it. And you don't need to eat this balanced diet every day. That's nonsense. Your body knows what you need, when you need it, and you just listen to your body. That's what I do. I listen to my body. And, you know, I mean, obviously still there's going to be some imperfections in my system. I'm far from perfect, like I said, but You listen to your body. And occasionally I'll take a calcium supplement like Coral Calcium to add to my dairy. But I don't even take that every day. So, but I try to get, I think 3 servings of dairy every day is a good idea for me. At least it works really well for me. Or at least it's necessary, I believe. But probably it's a good idea for most people to have several, maybe more than 3 for some people, servings of dairy, depending what the size of the serving and everything. You could say very small, very large servings or whatever, but I wouldn't take ever a very large serving. The other thing is large servings swell your stomach and make you hungrier the next time. So a large serving is not a really good idea. But when you're hungry, you have to eat, right? I mean, that's the thing. That's what your body tells you. If your body's hungry, it tells you you have to eat. So if you can somehow reduce that, you can drink water, but to reduce you can reduce the hunger by filling your stomach with more water in between meals, doing things that are good for you, like, you know, drinking some good water. I mean, now some of my water is fizzy water that comes from Quebec. But I also have my well water, which has got minerals. It's not been softened, so it's got all the minerals in it. So I'm drinking a lot of water, only water other than matcha tea. I think there's nothing. I'll occasionally drink the goat's milk by itself. You know, I'll occasionally drink a little bit of cream by itself. You know, I'll occasionally drink that, but I don't drink a large amount of anything other than the matcha tea and the water. I mean, that's what I drink a lot of. And maybe probably a lot more water than matcha tea, I would think, but I don't keep track of how much. Well, I boil almost 4 liters of water on my stove, and then I use that water to fill up my water that I use to take supplements with. And that water that I have a glass of right here, this glass that I use to take supplements, I fill that up in every day or two, or I mean every day or twice a day, I'll fill this up as I need to. So I'm drinking that water as well, and then I'll put 4 more liters in when I run out, and I'll boil that, and that's my well water, and I'll drink that. But I stick to water. I stick to water. I think water is the only thing that's safe. And even that's not safe. But I mean, water is it's the safest thing that we could ever drink as far as our health goes. I would never drink a canned or bottled thing anymore. To me, that's, well, wait a minute. The water is an exception, right? I drink the fizzy water in bottles. But I mean, a canned or bottled, even the fizzy water that's flavored, if it's natural flavoring, I can drink that too. But I'll only buy that if I can't get the non-flavored water. Or maybe I'll even buy it now for variety, but I just don't like the complexity. I don't like the added complexity of adding a flavor, which could be killing you if you don't know what was in that fruit that they used to get the flavor. So I'd rather keep it simple and drink the plain water. And I just like carbonated for a change, basically, I think. I'm not sure why my body likes the carbonated, but I do like the carbonated. I like cold, fizzy water when I've just been working and I want to quench my thirst. It really refreshes me, so that's why I drink that. And, I mean, some of the things we drink and eat our food for is to feel good and enjoy our eating and drinking. That's why we do it. We don't always do it just because we've analyzed what we need to eat, and that it's not always a scientific endeavor. But I believe everything we put into our bodies should be based on some science as well, that we know what the science is behind it. You know, because if we let go of that one, if we said we don't need any scientific basis for what we do, then we could smoke and drink as much as we want and do all this, because if we didn't have any science to tell us it's not good to do that, because we know it's not good, then we might do those things, you know. So, I mean, it's good that we use science to help us decide what to eat. But then there's a large proportion or fraction of the decision-making that's based on what we enjoy doing with food, how we enjoy to make our salad. We make whatever kind of salad we enjoy making. I've learned how to make my own salad in a way that I just love how it tastes. I love it every time I make it, and I basically make the same salad every time, yet I love it every time because I've learned how to make it to the point where, for me, I've achieved mastery for how I enjoy eating it. Now, I can probably I know there's another salad I know how to make too, which is strawberries and spinach. That's another salad I can make. That's absolutely fantastic. If I can get good spinach and good strawberries, I can make that, and it's delicious, you know. And that's a very simple salad with a little bit of olive oil and apple cider vinegar, and that's basically all you need in that. Oh, garlic too. Yeah, garlic and strawberries and spinach. Wow. If you have good, great, if you have fantastic, I've had that where I had great garlic, great strawberries, and great spinach all together, and it's absolutely delicious. But that's a different salad. My salad, I've talked about before, it's a different, it's many more ingredients. And it's, but I could learn how to make more salads in the future too. But this one is one that I don't eat every day, and I enjoy it so much that I can just make it any time, you know, that I want salad. But if I get tired of it, I'll make something new. This is amazing, though, what food is like to in my life. It's so, it's really the one of the best, one of the things I enjoy the most. But I need to learn now how to regulate the amount of fruit I eat and the amount of sugar I take in, and learn how to control my weight. That's my next thing. And I think I'm going to be able to do that, maybe. It's just never known for sure. But maybe by controlling the amount of sugar in the fruit that I eat as well, the amount of sugar I eat, I mean, including fruit, maybe that's going to give me more control. Maybe, I don't mean just more control, but the ability to lose weight. I mean, if I can lose weight while I'm eating normally every day, then I'll have achieved some new level of mastery that I didn't have before. Except I don't know whether I could have lost weight when I was younger, because I never gained any, so I couldn't see if I would lose any. But eating normally might cause you to lose weight when your body is taking in appropriate amounts of sugar. That's possible. I haven't learned that yet. And I'm older, too, so it's going to be impossible to learn what would have happened when I was younger, unless I can get young again. So, I mean, I'm still pretty young for my chronological age, I believe. But so this is time, I think, now to talk about the Proverbs chapter 30. It's a beautiful chapter, and it's different from the other ones because it's not the Proverbs of Solomon. It says, now let's pray to Jehovah for direct direction and guidance. Jehovah, help me and the little children to take in this information and to the best of our ability, but also in the way that you think is beneficial, and that we might receive the love that you have given us and be able to help others, possibly, in Jesus' name. Amen. The words of Agur, the son of Jake, the weighty message. The utterance of the able-bodied man to Ithiel. To Ithiel and Ucal. For I am more unreasoning than anyone else, and I do not have the understanding of mankind. And I have not learned wisdom, and the knowledge of the Most Holy One I do not know. Who has ascended to heaven that he may descend? Who has gathered the wind in the hollow of both hands? Who has wrapped up the waters in a mantle? Who has made all the ends of the earth to rise? What is his name? And what the name of his son, in case you know. Every saying of God is refined. He is a shield to those taking refuge in him. Add nothing to his words, that he may not reprove you, and that you may not have to be proved a liar. Two things I have asked of you. Do not withhold them from me before I die. Untruth and the lying word put far away from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Let me devour the food prescribed for me, that I may not become satisfied, and I actually deny you and say, who is Jehovah? And that I may not come to poverty, and I actually steal and assail the name of my God. Do not slander a servant to his master, that he may not call down evil upon you, and that you may not have to be held guilty. There is a generation that calls down evil even upon its father, and that does not bless even its mother. There is a generation that is pure in its own eyes, but that has not been washed from its own excrement. There is a generation whose eyes have become, oh, how lofty, and whose beaming eyes are lifted up. There is a generation whose teeth are swords, and whose jawbones are slaughtering knives, to eat up the afflicted ones off the earth, and the poor ones from among mankind. The leeches have two daughters that cry, "Give, give." There are three things that do not get satisfied. Four that have not said, "Enough." Sheol and a restrained womb, a land that has not been satisfied with water, and a fire that has not said, "Enough." The eye that holds a father in derision and that despises obedience to a mother, the ravens of the torrent valley will pick it out, and the sons of the eagle will eat it up. There are three things that have proved too wonderful for me, and four that I have not come to know. The way of an eagle in the heavens, the way of a serpent on a rock, the way of a ship in the heart of the sea, and the way of an able-bodied man with a maiden. Here is the way of an adulterous woman. She has eaten and has wiped her mouth, and she has said, "I have committed no wrong." Under three things the earth has been agitated, and under four it is not able to endure. Under a slave when he rules as king, and someone senseless when he has his sufficiency of food. Under a hated woman when she is taken possession of as a wife, and a maidservant when she dispossesses her mistress. There are four things that are the smallest of the earth, but they are instinctively wise. The ants are a people not strong, and yet in the summer they prepare their food. The rock badgers are a people not mighty, and yet upon a crag is where they put their house. The locusts have no king, and yet they go forth, all of them divided into groups. The gecko lizard takes hold with its own hands, and it is in the grand palace of a king. Right. I was going to say, is that four or five? It's four. There are three that do well in their pacing and four that do well in their moving along. The lion, which is the mightiest among the beasts and which does not turn back before anyone, the greyhound or the he-goat, and a king of a band of soldiers of his own people. If you have acted senselessly by lifting yourself up, and if you have fixed your thought upon it, put the hand to the mouth. For the churning of milk is what brings forth butter, and the squeezing of the nose is what brings forth blood. And the squeezing out of anger is what brings forth quarreling. The squeezing of the nose is what brings forth blood is a very, very important principle. I learned when I had a nosebleed and I called 911 a long time ago, some years ago. This was when Anne was still with us, I believe. Yeah, so this is more than 6 years ago probably now. Undoubtedly more than 6 years ago, because Anne died in November, but she went to the hospital in August. Or sometime around August, I believe. So, or July or August, she was already going to the hospital. For the churning of the, for the squeezing of the nose is what brings forth blood. And when I had a nosebleed and I called 911, they told me, "Don't touch your nose." That was the only thing they told me was, "Do not touch the nose. Put your nose over, put your head over the toilet and let it drip until it stops bleeding." That was the only advice they gave me. There was no other way to stop the nosebleed. They didn't tell me to use Kleenex, nothing. They said, they didn't say to do that at all. They just said, hang your head over the toilet, let your nose drip blood into the toilet until it stops dripping. So that's very interesting that scripture is completely in harmony with what they told me when I called 911. The wisdom of the Bible is just unsurpassed. There's nothing to compare with it. I learned how to treat wounds from the Bible, where it says in Isaiah about the squeezing out of the wound and binding it up. It talks about the squeezing out and the binding up. Let's go to Isaiah. I think it's chapter 1. That's how I can easily remember where it is. Wounds and bruises and fresh stripes, they have not been squeezed out or bound up. Right there, 1 and 6 of Isaiah tells us how to treat wounds. You should squeeze them out and bind them up. So even when, for example, you've got, you know, a pimple, some people say not to squeeze them, but wounds and bruises and fresh stripes, though. At least these other things, wounds and bruises and fresh stripes, and I would say possibly even these pimples, they're going to heal over faster if you can squeeze them out. Possibly with pimples. I certainly do it with any infections I have under my skin. I squeeze them out. That's what I do. But And then you know, you don't bind, you don't put a Band-Aid on everything, but not like a, you don't put a, you don't have to put a Band-Aid on a pimple for it to heal. But for anything that could get infected, you can, you should bind it up or put a bandage on it. If it's possible, you should definitely keep it clean, if you can, while it's healing. And it's just amazing the power of that scripture to facilitate healing. I use tea tree oil to make it, to kill all the germs before I put the Band-Aid on. Or, in the past, I've used what Anne used to use, which is, what's it called? Peroxide? What do we call it? It's hydrogen peroxide, I think. Hydrogen peroxide is the thing that we used. See, I could Google that right now. I don't want to open my window and have it reveal something that is private. Let's see. It's an antiseptic, I believe. It's an antiseptic, a mild antiseptic, but it's quite effective. But I believe that tea tree oil is even more effective because it kills fungus as well as bacteria. But peroxide's another thing that I do use. You can do both. You can use peroxide and then put the tea tree oil on too, I think, but that's more complex. Might be some interaction. Yeah, I think the idea of interactions, I used to worry about this when I used to take any food, right, or anything that I would put in my body, I would worry about the interactions between the two. So then, I mean, because I used to assume that, wrongly assume, that if I took one substance and then another food, one food and another food and put them together, they might do something completely different because they were combined, right? But generally, that's not true. There's not always an interaction. Like, because I thought that, this is the way people think. That's why they think by adding drugs to their body, they can create health. They get this wrong thought. But what that leads to is other types of thinking too. Like when I was thinking about repelling rats or rodents from my car in the winter, because I winterize the car and it's outside, it's covered up, but the rodents can get inside and they can chew through the different layers and get into the car potentially. So I'm using Bounce fabric softener underneath the car now. And inside the car, I put some more of this Bounce underneath the hood in the engine. I put Bounce in the engine compartment. But I also spray with peppermint spray now around the outside of the bottom of the tarp. I spray with peppermint oil. It's 10 drops for every 8 ounces of water. I put peppermint oil, essential oil of peppermint. That makes it unappealing to these animals, I believe. So I spray that around. I put the Bounce underneath the car as well, a couple of Bounce sheets, and I put some Bounce inside the car in the engine compartment, and I spray the engine compartment with peppermint oil inside. So I'm seeing if that's going to help deter them. Still haven't figured out where I need to wash inside the engine yet, so I'm deferring that till maybe some later time where I can figure out what I need to do to wash the engine. But it's winterized right now with this new method. But what I used to wonder was this. I used to think, well, peppermint combined with Bounce, that might attract rodents. I mean, that's what that reasoning leads to. If you believe that you can put something in your body, combine it with other things, and create an entirely new thing, that's just not going to be the case. But if you believe that, then you're going to wonder, you're going to worry that if I put two different deterrents together, it might attract what you're trying to deter. So you worry that the Bounce together with the peppermint is going to attract the rodents because they like the two together, but they don't like either of them. That's not sound reasoning. It's very likely that they're going to be repelled by one of them, and two of them are going to really drive them away. That's the more likely scenario. So this kind of reasoning is the way people, including me, the way it includes the way I used to think. I used to worry about putting food in my body because I didn't know how to put food in my body other than what my parents taught me, right? I didn't know anything about what was good for my body unless my parents told me. So when I was very young, that is. And then I didn't really ever learn until very recently, or relatively recently. I mean, you know, the past 20 years or something like that, I started learning about what was good for my body. 22 years, right around 2000, I started to take calcium, somewhere around that time. So I started to learn about what my body needed based on what someone else told me from the Calcium Factor book, which said calcium is essential in your body, in our bodies. You know, we're a calcium. We're not a carbon life form. We're a calcium life form, if you want to put it in that sense. If you want to name one element that we're essentially made of, it's calcium. It's not carbon. So, so the idea of coming back to this combining things idea, right? That you think that you can be the one who uses a drug smarter than anyone else. That's just wrong reasoning. You shouldn't use drugs at all. They won't lead to good things. I mean, the probability that they will lead to good things is outweighed by the much more enormous probability that they're going to kill you. That's far more enormous. It's not worth any risk to your health at all. You need to treat your body like it's a holy temple, and don't put anything in it that's not the healthiest possible food. That's basically the rule, okay? I mean, I guess we all make exceptions for that to some extent, I guess, but if we're imperfect, we do. Like when I drink fizzy water, I'm not sure how that benefits me as far as food goes, but I'm not sure if it does or not. It's water. I'm not sure what the carbon dioxide does. It's not a scientific study that I did to decide to drink that. But virtually everything I eat is based on science. Maybe except for that, and maybe I have to do research on that to find out why I drink it and see if it's actually a good thing or not. So then I can eliminate that if it's not good, and maybe that'll cure a lot of my problems by eliminating the carbonated water. Part of the reason is I don't want to use up my other water. That's the reason. Because I have limited well water. I have to boil it. I run the water into bottles, and I filled up 100 bottles the other day. Some of them 4 liters and some of them down to 1 liter in size, but different sizes of bottles, one and a half and 4 liter bottles, three different sizes that I filled up so that I can have water without running the tap all the time. So that water is my well water, and I don't want to use that up, so I drink other water so I don't use up the well water as quickly. That's the idea, I think, why I drink it. But the water I'm drinking is from a place in Quebec and it tastes really good, and I believe it's very healthy. The only thing I'm in doubt about is why the carbonation would be good for me. It's going to produce carbonic acid, which is going to probably just supplement the stomach acid. So, but I'm not sure if it's good or bad. As far as the scientific research, I'll have to try and find out about that. But everything we do, I mean, well, the xylitol gum is based on very good science in terms of what, you know, in terms of what research has been done about the effect of xylitol on the health. It's phenomenally good. So, yeah, it's amazing, absolutely amazing. But the thing is, science is not always right, and it changes. So we may later find out that xylitol causes some issues, but for now it looks phenomenally good. So I'm actually excited about xylitol. I'm excited about a lot of things in my diet. The xylitol is one of the most enjoyable things. The xylitol gum is one of the, chewing it is one of the most enjoyable things I do in my diet. That's one of the best things I do, is chew the xylitol gum, because it's so flavorful. Even though the flavor doesn't last long, it does a fantastic, almost miraculous job on preventing cavities, improving oral hygiene, and the hygiene of the intestines, and the health of the intestines, by producing short chain fatty acids in the intestines. It's phenomenal what it does. And I'm not just saying it because I've read that. I've been using it for a long time now, it seems like. At least 6 years. I don't know how much longer before that. Maybe more like 10 years, but some considerable length of time. Maybe 8 years, maybe 10 years, but definitely 6 years for that. So, okay, so there's lots of things to do today, probably, but I don't know what they are, and I'm a little more relaxed today. This video is now, let me check that. Oh, we're over an hour, so I better call it quits here. It's over an hour and 16 minutes. It's September 30th, 2022, 17:01 hours. This is Ward Green, and have a fabulous day. Enjoy your life, and enjoy your food, and I love you all, and be gracious, Jehovah, to us all, in Jesus' name. Amen. How do I stop this thing? Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay.